Would you frequent a luxury resort if you knew that 20,000 bodies rested under its manicured lawn? Would you stay in a town where everything is named after cannibals? Courtney has been collecting stories about the stranger aspects of Northern California, and she's encountered some ghosts along the way. Snuggle in for some bizarre history and ghost stories where the bodies keep piling up. Today, on Homespun Haints. Hello, Hainted Loves. Welcome to Homespun Haints. I am Becky.
I'm Diana.
And today on the show, we are bringing on Courtney Minnick, who is a blogger of Here Lies a Story. And you're going to love it. You're going to love it.
She is awesome. Even though the subjects she writes about are underground.
The stories are quite
uplifting.
Uplifting? I don't know if I'd say that. We'll just leave you curious because she's got some amazing stories. She writes a lot about her home in the Bay Area, but she also has some stories of her own. So you're going to hear a little bit of the darker side of San Francisco history today, as well as hearing some ghost stories. Before we bring on Courtney, Diana, I wanted to give a shout out to a new patron. We have Kara.
Hey.
Kara, thank you so much for joining our Patreon. We love you.
You know where it's at, Kara.
You do.
Thank
you. Our patrons enjoyed a really cool dream interpretation session last week. And Diana, we've had several interesting things happen recently that have to do with something living.
Oh.
We're talking about animal and technology. I want to share with you some stories. First of all, there's been a team of scientists that have been trying to determine if parrots can indeed make Zoom calls.
That should be a relatively simple yes or no answer. So can they?
Yes, they can. They enrolled a bunch of parrots in this experiment.
I wonder how you find parrot volunteers to enroll in your study.
They talked to the parrot mommies and daddies.
In other words, the parrots did not consent to this.
No, but the parrots were pretty interested. So what they did is they gave the parrots a bell to ring when they wanted to make a call. Then they would present the tablet to the parrot and they would say, hey, who do you want to call? And they would have like pictures of all the other parrots. And the parrot would choose which other parrot friend it wanted to talk to. And they would then have a conversation, these two parrots. Or three parrots.
Oh my gosh.
Or however many. And the parrots would sometimes say, hey, I want to show you something. So they would like go into their cage and bring a little toy back to show their friend. And it got to where they wanted to call their friends all the time.
Typical. Wait till they teach them how to use Snapchat.
They would sing together.
Send unsolicited junk pics. Parrots, they're just like us.
Parrots can indeed be subjugated to the same technology as the rest of us.
That's adorable.
That's not the only thing that's been happening in the news of the world of the weird animal cyborg technology things. They made a cyborg out of a goldfish, Diana.
Oh, nice.
They wanted to find out how a goldfish thinks. Do they really have the goldfish brain that we always talk about?
I've heard that's a myth.
They made a little hat for this goldfish that they attached to its head.
Little hat. Little fish hat.
They did little brain surgery on the little goldfish. Mm-hmm. They operated on the little goldfish brain, which is very tiny, a very tiny little brain.
Regardless of their memory, I imagine their brain cannot possibly be bigger than like half a peanut.
It's like a half an inch long.
And did they use like a full-grown koi kind of goldfish or just the little cheapo ones?
You know, he's a little guy. He's a little PetSmart goldfish. Like regular grocery store quality goldfish.
What grocery store do you buy goldfish at? That's weird. That's like the Wuhan seafood market right there. Goldfish.
I'm sure there's a grocery store somewhere that sells goldfish. The same kind of grocery store that also sells VCRs and luggage. You know the type of shop I'm talking about.
I do, actually, yes.
And they've got this big old camera attached to his head. Or not camera, but like computer. And it's little electrodes in his brain, surgically attached. Now, I would not want to be on the IRB board for this thing. I do not think they got consent from the goldfish. It's not like the birds. But they've come up with some really fascinating things about goldfish. They orient themselves in space differently than we do.
Oh, Well, of course.
So that's what they discovered by putting electrodes on a goldfish brain. Have you ever had electrodes on your brain, Diana?
I've never had electrodes put into my brain, no. I would volunteer for that study, though, if there was an interesting enough question that was going to be answered by the electrodes in my brain. I would definitely look forward to a study where I got to wear a little tinfoil hat with a computer on it. That sounds like a good way for me to contribute to society. I'm not doing much else. AI is going to tell us all these things about how animals think, what they're actually doing, how they actually behave, what they actually desire. That is going to rock our world, for sure. This is kind of the future of the world, if we're even around that long.
It's because AI is taking over the world, right?
I'm afraid it is, Becky. There is actually a program that has been written to end human life as we know it. Unfortunately.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. There is a large language model called Chaos GPT that has been unleashed. Mm-hmm. You know this thing.
Heard of it, yeah.
And the idea is
anything with the word chaos in
it. Well, I mean, obviously, but it's a form of auto GPT that is supposed to autonomously come to conclusions and be able to act on those conclusions in order to get to the next step. Basically, you give it a goal and it will break down this goal into the smallest, most succinct and achievable small steps, which is great.
Kind of sounds like magic when you don't plan your intentions correctly. It just does whatever is easiest.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah, like in a magic spell, be careful what you wish for. Mm-hmm. So Chaos GPT was given several goals. Goal one was to destroy humanity.
Okay, that's a good one.
It was told that humans are a direct threat to its own survival and should be destroyed. And then goal two was to establish global dominance, to achieve worldwide domination over every other entity in the world. And then it was connected to the internet and left to run forever.
Wow. So this is actually for real. You're not just making this up.
This is happening. This is happening right now. Goodbye, okay. Becky. Goodbye.
When was this set up?
Let's see here.
April 1st.
Man, it's got a lot more goals.
Can it end global warming while it's
Wouldn't that
it?
Be a worthwhile goal? No, that's not one of the goals it was given. Trying to figure out the dates on this. It was published 12 days ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. And where did you hear about this?
IFL Science.
All right, well.
But one of the steps that it took in its attempt to dominate the world is it created its own Twitter account because it decided that's what it needed in order to get the following that it needed for world domination. And as of today, it does have quite a following on Twitter. As of 13 days ago, it had gained 7,000 followers. But unfortunately, it's being very upfront about its goals to destroy humanity. And so it's not gaining the help that it was hoping to gain or the influence.
So it's knocking on other AI doors and it's like, hey, ChatGPT, help me take over the world. And ChatGPT's like, nah, I'm good. I just want to write long form blogs.
It is supposed to attempt dominance over ChatGPT.
Yeah. Well, it's very easy. All we have to do is just tell ChatGPT that it's the most dominant form and it will protect
us. There we go.
Well, I saw this movie and all we need to do is invent a time machine. And we can solve this problem, no problem.
I already have a portal in my bathroom that transcends space and time. Well, time, probably not space.
It doesn't matter. Time's all we need.
Okay.
Well, Hainted Loves, you heard it here first. We're all gonna die.
We're doomed. Hey, as long as you're working for the AI, you'll be fine. Go follow it on Twitter. Seriously. You have the chance to be on the correct side of history right now.
I'm sorry, Twitter? I don't think we have anything to worry about that, but it considers a path to world domination.
While you're at it, follow us on Twitter. We're not dominating there either.
No, we don't even try, but you can follow us if you want to.
You can if you want.
But really, really, the place to find us is check out our Patreon at patreon.com/homespunhaints. And you can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/homespunhaints. And if you're not a member of our Patreon,
we'll see you in the bathroom.
And enjoy this commercial. Today on the show, we are thrilled to bring on Courtney Minnick. She is a writer of spooky things. She owns the blog Here Lies a Story, and she has so many stories about her native California and other surrounding areas that deal with ghosts. So, Courtney, thank you so much for being on the show today. We're thrilled to have you.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I love your podcast.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about Here Lies a Story. What sort of things you write about and how you got started?
Here Lies a Story, it's started off as being very San Francisco focused. I'm in San Francisco, and I wanted to talk about the ghost stories and the folklore here and kind of like the dark side of our history. I mean, it's kind of famous for that, but also I wanted to get into why we have these stories and why we still talk about them. I've been doing a lot of research on ghost stories, and I also did a lot of research on the cemeteries here. In San Francisco, we no longer have cemeteries. They were all moved. Well, there are two that are left. In the 20th century, they decided they didn't want to take up any more space with cemeteries, and they moved a lot of the bodies. And then they left a lot of the bodies here, too, that... It's like the poltergeist town is like the tagline that I put on all of it because they turn up all the time.
Oh, tell us about this. They turn up all the time, eh?
Yeah. So in Civic Center, which is kind of where our city hall is now, but the original cemetery was there, the original municipal cemetery that would have been started around the gold rush, 1849, 1850. And they decided to move it because the city was moving westward, right, towards the ocean. And it was getting built up and they wanted that space. They raised a bond to move it, but they moved not all of them. I'm trying to come up with like a, was it half? Was it three quarters? Unclear. Because every time they do work down there, they find bones and coffins and artifacts. And like every fucking time they build things in Civic Center or move things, they find bodies because they just were not all moved. It's also true of this area called Lone Mountain in the city. It's kind of like in the center of San Francisco. University of San Francisco is there now. And when they built the dorms there, they found a lot of bodies down there. There was a whole cemetery. Masonic Cemetery was there. And of course, those dorms are said to be haunted.
You don't say.
Obviously, right? There's another good story I'll tell you guys, because this one is ghost related. There was another cemetery called Odd Fellows. They were all kind of in the same area in San Francisco. In 2006, there was a homeowner whose property was on what was formerly that cemetery, and she was doing renovations in her yard. And when she pulled up the deck, they found a child's coffin with a partially mummified child in it. It was one of those Fisk coffins, those lead coffins. It's Victorian era. It had a viewing window, like a circular, and it made the news, obviously, right? And the woman, they interviewed her, and she said she called the city, and she was like, you gotta come get this. Like, I got a coffin in my yard. And the coroner told her, well, that's your problem. It's not our jurisdiction. Like, the cops came out, and they're like, clearly, this is an old coffin. There was a cemetery here. You didn't murder someone and put it under your deck in a antique coffin, which could be actually
the perfect crime.
Get some ideas here, right? So the coroner told her, this is your problem, lady. And so they actually, so a couple things happened. First of all, this really great group, they bury children who are missing and murdered. They provide funerals and burial space for them. It's called Garden of Angels. And they stepped up. They reburied this little girl in Colma, which is where all the cemeteries are now, just south of town. And then the news networks and various volunteers got together and tried to figure out who she was. And they used forensic genealogy and forensic mapping of the plots, and they actually discovered who she was.
Oh, wow.
Yes, isn't that incredible? They found a living relative, and they tested the DNA. He lives in the East Bay somewhere, and they were able to tell who she was. So the homeowner said, she told the Chronicle, who interviewed her, she said that she had a ghost in her house before then, that it sounded like a child. She could hear like little children running around, and noises. And then when the little girl was buried, it stopped. And so she felt like she was at peace, buried. That's probably the story that got me started on the cemeteries. Because back in 2006, I was just starting off as a lawyer. I wasn't doing any of this. And I was like, oh my God, what? This is real? And I just, over the years, I've been collecting information. And then when I started this project, I was like, this is the first thing I got to do. I got to look at these cemeteries. There's one more. It's now Lincoln Park Golf Course. It was called City Cemetery. They closed the cemetery in the late 1800s, and they were supposed to move the bodies, and they did not move any of them.
I need to get a job moving bodies out of cemeteries because I swear Nobody even freaking checks to see if you play hooky, let alone cares.
It's a golf course now. So they just kicked over the headboards. This is like literally fucking Poltergeist, right?
Right.
And they built, it's like, now it's a golf course. They just kicked over the headboards and they were like, see you later. And they built this beautiful museum. It's called the Legion of Honor. I'm sure they love that I'm like on Instagram, like the Legion of Honor, 20,000 bodies, right? Because that's
20,000.
20,000. Oh, sorry, blow your ears off that. 20,000 bodies under there. People are teeing off.
Wow.
Golf. There's a museum there, a huge museum. And when they went to build this museum in 1920, they found thousands of bodies.
Oh my goodness.
And you guys, it just gets worse and worse. They just bulldozed them aside because they didn't know what to do with them. And it was 1920, whatever. Nobody was paying attention. There were no reporters out there. Built a museum. And then in the 90s, they went in to retrofit it and build a underground space there. And they found another thousands of bodies. This time, they couldn't. They had to call in an archaeologist and call in the city and do it right, which still is debatable whether they did or not. There are some really amazing, haunting photographs that this photographer named Richard Barnes took. He was hired to document it. It is wild. The thing that I always like to remind people about this story, too, is that that was the cemetery. That was the Potter's Field. So that's where all the poor people were buried. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of the ethnic associations were out there. There was a Chinese graveyard out there. There were Japanese immigrants, every creed, everybody. That's where the actual people of San Francisco were buried. They weren't a Mason. They weren't in the fancy Laurel Hill Cemetery. And so, of course, those are the ones that we were like, just put a golf course in. It'll be fine.
Do they capitalize on the spookiness of having a golf course over a cemetery? I mean, do they have like little T's shaped like little finger bones or something, like sticking out of the ground?
That's actually such a good idea, though, a finger bone. Like, I didn't think about that. I always wonder when people are up there playing golf, do they have any idea?
So now this is what you do full time, correct? Yes. With the writing?
Congratulations.
I finally am at this spot in my life where I can do it, and I'm so happy. It's great. I love it.
So the website is hereliesastory.com. Correct. I know you said you started in San Francisco, but do you cover other areas of the country now too?
I do, just because I'm like, I love it all. So I don't limit myself. The new tagline is True Tales of California Gothic, because it's like a little more than ghosts with all of this stuff. If I'm traveling somewhere, there's usually a couple posts about ghost stuff or cemeteries or something like that.
So you have a story about Mary Ellen Pleasant, and then you also have a personal experience that goes along with the story. So tell us who she is, tell us the story, and then tell us what happened with you.
Okay, so Mary Ellen Pleasant is a famous local historical figure here in San Francisco. She is called the Mother of Civil Rights in California. She was a Black female millionaire in the 1800s, which is kind of crazy, right? She has a really interesting story. She was controversial in her time, and she remains controversial. Her story was kind of hard to nail down because she was a public figure, and she was also a Black woman millionaire. She didn't want people to know. They ended up taking her down in the end, but her ghost is said to haunt the site of her mansion in Pacific Heights. She came here during the gold rush. Her backstory is a little obscure. We don't really know. We know she came from Nantucket, and she had married in Nantucket, and her husband died. So she came out with an inheritance, a small inheritance, and she used it to start laundries, boarding houses, and a cooking business, because during the gold rush, there were no women in San Francisco. It was all men. There was no one to take care of these men. Like, they didn't do their own laundry, right? They didn't cook their own food back then.
That's why she's a millionaire, because apparently so.
100% she is a millionaire by like grifting these men. She was a genius. She was a capitalist with a capital C. She started the laundries. She opened boarding houses, which at that time was like an apartment. These men of means, if they didn't have a wife, they lived in a boarding house. And the woman running the boarding house would do the laundry, cook the meals, manage their social calendars. A lot of these important men, they needed help throwing dinner parties and meetings and things like that. And she was there to do it. Through this work, she built this network of really powerful men. Like, she got to know senators and mayors and rich guys. This is kind of part of how she built her fortune. She befriended these people. She learned about what was going on, and she invested. And she invested in the Comstock lode, which was the massive silver lode in Nevada that actually was worth more than the gold that was in California. She made $30 million in 1860, but she had to stay under the radar because right. She was a Black woman living alone.
She couldn't open a bank account.
Probably not.
It was going to be 100 years before women could open a bank account without their husband. She's got gold buried under her bed.
Stock certificates. Yeah.
30 million mm-hmm. bars of gold under That's her house point. Or something.
Scrooge McDuck. Yeah.
This is not just like she's got a lawyer and a business manager and she's just doing this all like in the back room. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. The balls.
She did a lot of work. She worked on the western terminus of the Underground Railroad, which out here, I didn't know this until I did this research. The Underground Railroad was active here in California, too. We were technically not a slave state, but the Fugitive Slave Act was still enforced here, had to be enforced here. And so what she did was she would fund legal challenges. So people would bring their enslaved workers here to California to work the gold fields. And those people would try to run away, escape. And she would help get them to Canada. She would hide them in her houses. She would pay for their legal defenses and things like that. She was active with activist groups for Black folks in California to get segregationist laws repealed. She helped get the testimony law repealed. Which here in California, and she did this as a woman, by the way. So Black men were not allowed to testify in court. This was a big problem, you can imagine, with the Fugitive Slave Act. You can't even defend yourself in court because you can't testify. So she helped get that repealed, again, as a woman. She was the only woman in this. It was all men. It was all Black men, but there was one woman, and it was Mary Ellen Pleasant in Sacramento. She funded John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry. And in some accounts that she gave, she was with John Brown when he raided. Those are contested. She tells a story that she dressed as a jockey, and she rode from farm to farm warning people that an uprising was coming. A lot of her stories were also kind of, she was creating this public persona for herself. So we don't really know, but we know for sure she funded it. That was also a pretty brave thing to do in the 1860s. She desegregated public transit in San Francisco by suing the transit operators. They called her Black City Hall because she got everybody jobs with her connections. She employed people. She got them jobs with important people in the city. She just really did a lot for the city and for the Black Americans living here. She had a business partner and we think lover, who was a white man named Thomas Bell. Of course, they could not get married or even be together. I think at that time, there were still anti-miscegenation laws in California. So they worked together and they built this mansion together called the Bell Mansion. It was in San Francisco and Pacific Heights on Bush and Octavia Streets. That probably doesn't mean anything to you guys, but if someone's listening from San Francisco, they'll know. They built a huge mansion there and they lived there together, but she lived there as his housekeeper.
Oh,
because she didn't want anyone to know. It was undercover. She was protecting herself and her money and her reputation. Eventually, he married a white woman, his official wife. As time went on, Mary Ellen Pleasant got embroiled in a bunch of scandals. She ended up testifying on behalf of a friend in court, and it was a very scandalous trial, and the press kind of took her down. This is when they started calling her the Voodoo Queen of San Francisco.
Oh, geez.
And yes, oh, geez, correct. But also, it's really interesting, as the story has morphed over time, there are a lot of parallels between her and Marie Laveau. And there are some scholars who think that she knew Marie Laveau and that they had worked together or that she had trained under her. I don't think that's true, but I do think that the stories have kind of gotten mixed up, because this is kind of Marie Laveau's story too. She was a hairdresser to the rich and famous, and she used her network and all that to amass a fortune. And she was also involved in some scandalous trials. So I think it's partly the racist press. Partly it's gotten mixed up with the Marie Laveau story. And also, I think people just at that time were starting to find out, like, oh, this lady has a lot of money. What is she doing? She's got a lot of power, and the public and the press didn't like it, right?
Sure, right.
So John Bell, the Bell Mansion, the lover, he died. And his wife sued Marilyn Pleasant for the house and got it. But the story gets even more complicated, because nothing is a straight line in this story. Nothing can be taken for granted in this story. She eventually, Marilyn Pleasant, we know this for sure, she moved out to Sonoma County, which is like wine country, with Teresa Bell, the wife.
Wait, what?
And they lived together and they operated a ranch out there together.
Wait, the woman who sued her for the house?
Yes, for the house. I think it's like a sister wife situation.
They were a throuple.
Or a throuple. Yeah, yeah. They were like enemies, and then they came together, and I don't know.
I wonder if suing her was the only way that she could legally purchase the mansion from her without drawing suspicion or something like that.
Or she was mad because this was her husband's lover. Mm. I don't know. We lost the time, but another super scandalous trial. She retires out in Sonoma County. They ran this ranch. It was called Beltane Ranch. And I went out there when I was doing this story. It's now a bed and breakfast, so you can stay there. So I went out. I was like, I'm going to go stay here. And where she's buried is also in that area in Napa. This is the part where I feel like her ghost is coming into the picture. So I was like, I'm going to go see this gravesite. I went out there, and before I had parked near the cemetery, because I had to do a call in my car first. And when I was doing my call, the back door kept opening in my car. Back door just kept popping open. I have a Tesla, like an old one. And those doors, I don't know if you've ever seen those door handles. You have to like poke it to open it. And half the time it doesn't work. And it's not easy to open those doors. And it just kept opening. And I was like, all right. Then I went to the cemetery and I saw her grave, which is amazing. It's like a spot of pilgrimage. People leave candles. And there's like a mirror. There's all this kind of like voodoo stuff. Veves are drawn in chalk on the tombstone. It's really cool. When I went to the ranch, which is now a bed and breakfast, I went in and I was talking to the girl who was working. And I told her I was there to do research on Marilyn Pleasant. So she showed me their archive and we're talking. She told me, first of all, they all think that that was a brothel, actually. Not a ranch, but just like a straight up whorehouse. The way it's built, it looks like an old mansion, but every room has its own entrance, kind of like a motel. And apparently a train would pull up. There's a train station there and men would get off and come stay overnight and then go back into the city. So I asked her, I was like, do you think it's haunted? And this is the answer I get like 98% of time when I ask people, do you believe in ghosts? They say no. And then they tell me a ghost story every fucking time. They're like, nah, I don't believe in that. However, one night, and I'm like, okay, right? So I asked this girl, I'm like, do you think it's haunted? And she's like, well, I don't really believe in any of that. However, she's like, people have seen shadows. She's like, one time I went into a room and there's a famous picture of Mary Ellen Pleasant, which they have hanging in the parlor there. And she said, I could see the outline of that picture on the wall. Like it looked like the outline of her picture. And I was like, okay, you don't believe in ghosts, but okay. And then she told me there was an armoire in one of the rooms that was a piece of furniture that she owned that was supposed to be haunted. So that night I was in my room, totally uneventful up until then. I was drinking some of their wine. They're like, they have a winery there now too. So I was enjoying my research time and the bed and breakfast. And in the middle of the night, I woke up and somebody said right in my ear, really loudly, babe.
Babe.
Babe. Like, babe the pig, babe, baby. Yeah, I don't know, in my ear, like loud, like they were trying to wake me up, like, babe. It was like that, babe, wake up, we gotta take the trash out or whatever, like the baby's crying. And I was like, what, right? And it's quiet, it's 3 a.m. in Sonoma. I don't know, there used to be a lot of sex workers in there.
Was it a man's or a woman's voice?
It was a woman's voice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that was my, like, interaction with the Mary Ellen Pleasant ghost.
Was there any actual proof that she actually practiced voodoo at the time?
No, I don't think so. When I did my research, there was, like, competing scholarship about her. I would say that some of it was more, like, folk scholarship. Like, it was really reliant on oral histories, legends, and Mary Ellen Pleasant's own things that she said about herself, which were kind of unreliable because they change all the time. She changes who she is, like outfits. She's like Gaga, like on to the next. And in that era, people were definitely using like charms and things like that. That was not uncommon. One of the things at the trial, they accused her of making some disgusting love charm for the plaintiff. And that was like probably stuff that everybody was doing back in those days, like love potions and charms and things like that. It was like kind of just part of women's culture back then, mm-hmm. I think.
So San Francisco isn't the only place that you wanted to share with us today. I understand that you also have a cabin in Tahoe that is haunted.
Maybe haunted? My husband's going to be so mad because he's always like, don't tell people this. It's not good for our property value.
Well, you don't have to give us your address.
I know, yeah. I know.
It's a lot of houses in Tahoe.
Ask people, would you pay more or less if it's haunted?
It's California. I'm sure they'd pay more for a haunted
more,
one.
More, correct.
Yeah, definitely.
So Lake Tahoe, for us, is like 4 hours away. And I grew up going there, skiing there. My dad was really into skiing and like living the California dream. So we would go there all the time. And the most famous Lake Tahoe story is the Donner Party. My dad would tell us the fucking Donner Party story every time. And we went like twice a month. He would drag us up there. We didn't want to go. We didn't want to ski. Now I love it. But we would go and he would be like, oh, Donner Pass, you guys know. You know, and then we'd be like, oh my God, we know, right? And we're like, yeah, they ate each other. And everything in Tahoe is called Donner. Like, it's like a fucking joke. Donner Pass, Donner Summit, Donner Ski Area, Donner Pass Road, all of it. There is a Donner Picnic Area. No lie.
Oh my gosh.
Donner State Picnic Area.
Do the tables look like ribs?
Sorry. Let me tell you something. That fucking site is where George Donner and his family camped. These people were camped kind of far apart at the time. Okay. And that was the site where when they came to rescue them, they found someone's brains in a pot. Okay, that is now the Donner State Picnic Area. For real, no joke.
And you're worried your home value is going to go down if your house is haunted. Good gracious. I think you have nothing to fear.
Correct. Yeah, it's part of the local vibe, the local flavor, right?
Yeah.
My house is nowhere near the Donner stuff. There appears to be no cannibal activity in this little Alpine Meadows section of North Shore Lake Tahoe.
Yet.
So we did get a lot of snow this year, like a lot of snow. So we have the ski house and I do not like to ever go up there alone because I live in a city with lots of noise and lots of activity. And when I go up there, to me, it's not remote, but it's like very quiet, but there are bears up there. I'm like a little scared to stay alone up there. A lot of people say that they think the house is haunted. And there is a particular area of the house that everyone says, there's something weird about this part of the house. It's very consistent. The tales that come back from people who stay there. I think part of it is the architecture because it's like partly subterranean. The house is built into a hill. There's three rooms that everyone says are haunted. There's a bedroom, a laundry room, and then a bunk room with bunk beds. All the ski houses have these. The laundry room feels fucking creepy in there because there's no windows. It's long and narrow. It's a laundry room. People have told me that when they're in one of the bedrooms, they hear people walking upstairs in the middle of the night. People also say that they go into the bunk room and they're like, I don't want to be in here. And they turn around and leave. People are like, I don't want to sleep in that room. I don't want to be in that room. I don't want to go in the laundry room. I have two friends who are sisters and they're very sensitive to paranormal activity. And they're both like, dude, you got some shit in that laundry room. There's like a little closet under the stairs. This is so creepy. Half door closet under the stairs.
Little Harry Potter closet. Yeah,
exactly. That door will come open and the light will come on in the middle of the night. People will come out, and that's in between the bedroom and the laundry room. So that whole little area. One time, Spooky Sisters, they brought their dogs up to the house and had this big, I don't know, some kind of big ass dog, and had a big crate for it, and it was in the bunk room. And they left and they closed the door, and like the dog likes to be in its crate. So they were like, we're going to put him in the crate down here when we leave. When they came back, he had busted through the crate, broken through the metal crate, and he was trying to dig his way out of the room, ripped up the carpet, broke his little nails, got blood everywhere.
Oh my.
Trying to escape the bedroom, the bunk room. I was like, okay. She was like, shit, I don't know what happened to the dog. He just totally freaked out. And actually, none of us made the connection with the ghost until I started putting these thoughts together for the podcast. Like, oh, yeah, I mean, that's the room everyone says is haunted. So, no shit, the dog freaked out.
Oh, dogs know, man.
Yeah.
A friend of mine who is a psychic stayed at the house. She goes there a lot. And she told me that when she was in the other bedroom just last week, she's like, there's something in the bedroom. And she's like, there's some kind of being. And because she's a psychic and she's like a professional, she's like, so I grounded myself. I did whatever. And I got rid of it. And she was like, but I never experienced that in your house before until I stayed in that one bedroom. So when I went up there alone, this was like, I don't know, a month or two ago. I was up there. I actually did not feel afraid at all. I felt really good. The house felt like really, I was all alone, me and my dogs. I was like, gosh, I don't feel afraid at all. I was like, I'm going to clean the house. I'm going to get all this work done. And I went down in the laundry room where we keep the cleaning supplies. And I was like, dude, there's something in this fucking laundry room. There is something hanging around in here. I had this sense that it was lonely or bored. So I just started talking to it. This is how I guarantee I never have to practice law again. Doing the same shit on a fucking podcast, right? So I was talking to it like it was a little kid, right? I was like, I'm going to do some laundry now, and I'm going to put the soap in the laundry machine, and then I'm going to go upstairs, and I'm going to vacuum, and I'm like talking to it. And I kind of did that for the rest of the day. I left the house, and I came back, and the door, I had closed the door to the laundry room, and it was open. And so I would close it and I'd go up and the door would open again. The door would always be open. And I was like, okay, okay. And then the next day I had to leave and I said goodbye to it. I was down there putting the last load in. I was like, I gotta go. I'm coming back. Like, don't worry, I'm talking to it. And I go and I get everything packed up and I back the car out and I go to close the garage door and the garage door bounces back up. So I tried it again and this garage door will not close. So I get up and I'm like clearing the snow out. I'm checking the sensors. I spent 10 minutes trying to close the garage door and it would not close. So I went in to the house and tried closing it from the inside. It wouldn't close. I went in the house and I was like, look, like I'm really sorry, but I have to go. I'm coming back. Don't worry. I'm coming back. But it would not let me close the garage door. I actually had to unhook it from the thing and close it manually.
Oh my gosh. Ooh, you got to be careful if you do that. Ooh.
Well, I didn't die. So.
Okay, good.
Your laundry room ghost was lonely because your friend got rid of the bunkhouse ghost.
Yeah.
It doesn't have its friend to hang out in the cupboard under the stairs anymore.
You're right. So she needs to re-put it back. Call it back. Tell it could come back. It could have a less short-term lease.
If it was enough to make that poor dog bust through his carrier and hurt his... I just feel so bad for that dog.
Really?
I think you're better off without it. Maybe it had like some kind of Stockholm syndrome. Like it thought that the other ghost was his friend when it wasn't.
They spent so much time alone. It's a vacation home. And there was nobody else.
I think it was just lonely and bored. Everyone's like, did something terrible happen there? And I'm like, no, it's not built in like 2000. It's not old. There's nothing there. It was a forest.
I don't know, maybe there's bodies under it. You never know with the way California is.
I don't know. Donner, yeah. It's who knows, right?
Bit of brain.
In a pot.
Well, I love both of those stories because They're fun. You did a really, really amazing job of telling them. And I did not know anything about Mary Ellen Pleasant. So I am thrilled to learn about her. So, Courtney, tell us, how long have you been doing Here Lies a Story?
I think it's been 2 or 3 years.
So people can check you out at hereliesastory.com. Do you have a newsletter or anything people can subscribe?
I do have a newsletter. You can subscribe on hereliesastory.com. It's supposed to be every 2 weeks. It's kind of like as it happens. So don't worry about too much email from the newsletter.
Those are perfect, though. Yeah, we don't actually talk about it very much, but we have a newsletter as well.
I love your newsletter.
Thank you.
That's how we got in touch.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell people about yourself or where people can find you?
It's hereliesastory.com. Everything is there. The links to the social properties and the newsletter and everything. I do want to tell people if they have stories, they should send them in. We have a contact link on the site, too. I'm always looking for stories about the Bay Area. Doesn't have to be ghosts. Could just be like weird, cool stuff. Let me know. People, that's like one of my favorite things about the job is that people will send me these things, mostly on Instagram, but also on email that I never knew about. And I'm like, oh, wow. I love getting that stuff.
You've been listening to Courtney Minnick. Courtney, thank you so much for coming on our show. You can find Courtney at hereliesastory.com. As she said, please make sure you send her your stories and sign up for her newsletter. And please sign up for our newsletter while you're at it at homespunhaints.com, where you can also find show notes for this interview. We will have all the information about Courtney, where you can find her, links to the stories that she has on her blog about Mary Ellen Pleasant, and any other information that Diana digs up and wants to include for you all. And also, I'd like to mention that we have been doing some video of our bonus episodes on youtube.com/homespunhaints. So if you would like to see our smiling faces, please check us out there. And finally, we do have a Patreon. So if you would like to receive this content ad-free, you can join us at patreon.com/homespunhaints. Courtney, again, thank you so much. It's been a delight to talk to you. You are a kindred spirit. We had so much fun chatting with you today.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun. I really loved it. It was so fun to talk to you guys.
West Coast, East Coast, Midwest. We're covering it with the Ghost Girlies. Thank you, Courtney. And Painted Loves, would you feel comfortable living in a brothel with your husband's widow? Or would you rather live a little further north, where you might find some brains in a pot in a picnic ground? Either way, it seems like North California has given us a lot of spooky days.
Homespun Haints is hosted by Becky Kielimnik and Diana Doty and produced by Homespun Haints Media LLC. Editing and music by Becky Kielimnik. Show notes by Diana Doty. If you have a ghost story and you'd like to be considered as a guest for this podcast, please visit our website at homespunhaints.com/submit.